4.
Okay, the September 5th Town of Coolville Planning Commission meeting is called to order. Could we please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, I think each of you have an agenda. Are there any changes to that agenda that you would like to make?
I move that we approve the agenda as we have it.
Is there a second?
I second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
And you all received the minutes from the July 18th meeting. And I'm sure that you've all read them. Are there any corrections, additions?
I have one correction, Chair, on page 4. third paragraph down, I believe that's Commissioner Reyes seconded the motion. I didn't second my own motion, so.
I don't see where it says who seconded it.
Oh, just right here.
Oh, yeah, Commissioner Ward moved, Commissioner Reyes seconded.
Yeah. Right.
Right here. Okay. Are there any other corrections, additions? Okay. Hearing done, is there a motion to approve?
Make a motion to approve the July 18th minutes.
With the corrections?
With the corrections.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
In favor? Aye.
Aye.
And I'd just like to add here what a tremendous job that I think Carol Brown does in recording these meetings and generating the minutes. The clarity and the comprehension is just of what went on is just outstanding. So, thank you. Oh, and then one other thing, we all have met Julie, but we welcome you as our newest commissioner and look forward to your input and additions.
Let me say that now.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, at this time, the public hearing portion of this meeting is open, and the agenda item is a public hearing for conditional use application CUP 084-17. As a first order of business, do any of the commissioners wish to declare a conflict based on personal interest or bias or to disclose any ex parte communications?
I've had no ex parte communication, and as far as I know, I have no conflict of interest.
Yeah, as far as I know, I have no conflict of interest.
Okay, and I feel the same way. Now, does any member of the public wish to challenge the fairness or impartiality of any commissioner to participate in the hearing and decision? Okay, if you did, you must state facts relied upon by the party relating to the commissioner's bias, prejudgment, personal interest, or other facts from which the party has concluded that the commissioner will not make a decision in an impartial manner. So that rests on you two? Okay. Hearing done, then we'll move on. This hearing will be held in accordance with the land use procedures adopted by the Town of Coopville in the Coopville Town Code. The purpose of these hearings is to take public comment on the applications before us and to create a project record that will be forwarded along with the Planning Commission's recommended decision to the Town Council. The Town Council will review the record and issue a final decision that may be appealed according to the appeal procedures in the Coopville Town Code. Please be aware that these proceedings will be recorded, and commissioners, staff, applicants, audience members, if you are addressing this meeting, please speak into the microphone so that Carol can record your comments accurately. Okay, prior to the meeting, staff provided the commission and applicant with a staff report and 9 exhibits describing the proposal and staff's analysis of its consistency with the applicable approval criteria. Staff recommends approval of the conditional use permit subject to one condition. Copies of the staff report are available at the back of the room. The hearing process will start with a presentation by staff, followed by questions to staff from the commission. The applicant will then have the opportunity to augment, clarify, or rebut staff's comments and to respond to questions raised by the commission. After the applicant's comments, any interested party, if there would be any at that point, may address the commission regarding the application. Speakers should be advised that the Planning Commission's purview is limited to the scope of this project and the conditional use criteria in Chapter 16.14 of the Town Code. Also be aware at the end of the public comment portion of the hearing, no additional testimony or exhibits may be provided for the record. The Town Council will review the record as developed through this hearing, but cannot accept additional comments. So, at this point, may we have the staff report, Owen?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good evening. To begin with, you will note that I provided an additional comment letter received subsequent to the issuance of the staff report, and this we'll address it in my comments, but I would recommend that the Planning Commission accept this correspondence as Exhibit 10 of the record.
I move that the record be augmented by the addition of Exhibit 10.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to include an email from Sarah Richards labeled Exhibit 10. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Thank you. The proposal is to construct a two-story 4,300 square foot duplex on a 6,000 square foot lot at the northeast corner of Northwest 8th Street and Northwest Alexander Street. The property is addressed as 24 Northeast 8th Street. It is a corner lot adjacent to the library on the southwest, and single family homes on the north, east, and south. The property is noted on, as you can see on Exhibit 9 of the staff report, which is a detail of the town zoning map. The property is on the edge of the, is zoned town commercial, but is on the edge of the town commercial district. Adjacent to the south is RM 9600, which is the town's primary single-family zone, and to the south on the across Northwest 8th Street, and to the west across Northwest Alexander Street is a public quasi-public zone, and that again has includes the library and the town green and the access to the town's public open space. In addition to the email that you accepted as Exhibit 10, two other comment emails are in the record. The other two addressed parking and building massing as the primary concerns, and the third one primarily addresses stormwater concerns. So to approve a conditional use permit, There are three findings that must be made, and these are discussed at some length in the staff report. I will go over them briefly. The first is that the proposed use at the proposed location is consistent with the purposes of the development regulations and zone district in which it is to be located, and that the proposed use will meet all the applicable requirements of the development regulations. So again, as discussed in the staff report, according to the purpose statement, both in the comprehensive plan as well as the development regulations in Chapter 1608 of the Coopville Town Code, the primary intent of the town commercial zone is for commercial uses. The purpose statement does not refer to residential uses. However, the implementation of that in the table that outline that in which the permitted principal, permitted accessory uses, and conditionally permitted uses are laid out, residential uses are identified both or single family in a occupying a designated historic home is an outright permitted use. Any other single family home, duplex or multifamily, is a conditional use, but is in staff's view as conditional uses, they are still interpreted to be primarily consistent with the intent of the zoning designation. Staff feels that it does meet that criteria. There is a table provided on pages 5 and 6 of the staff report that goes through the applicable land use regulations that would have bearing on this project. The setbacks in the town commercial zone are fairly limited. They are 10 feet front yard, 6 foot rear yard, and 10 foot side yard, which is significantly less than in a standard single family standard single family zone. There are no qualifications that this would not in the code that this would not all similarly these setbacks would similarly not apply to a single family or to a residential use. There is no maximum lot coverage in the zone. The building height is 28 feet, and that is that's townwide, and the proposal meets all setbacks. It has a significant lot coverage, but there is no limit on that, and it is well within the building height maximum. There will be adequate landscaping. As part of that, there is a requirement for a certain number of tree credits, as identified in Chapter 1620 of the Town Code, that will be required. Those are reflected on the site plan. It's not clear whether all those will be. There are some at the southwest corner near the intersection, just adjacent to the intersection, that may conflict with the clear visibility triangle. But in general, there appears to be no issue with getting the required tree credits on the site. Parking is, for a duplex, requires 4 spaces. The parking proposed for this development is a little unusual. It is split into 2 places. There is a garage, 2-car garage, that will account for 2 of the spaces. 1 space, which is allowed by code to be a compact space, will occur in front of the garage doors. And the code does not prohibit tandem parking, which is one vehicle in back of another, so that one is required to move to allow the further vehicle in to leave. But since it's not addressed in the code, it is staff's interpretation that is an allowed accommodation. The 4th one is not shown on the site plan, but would occur adjacent to the northwest corner of the building. This would be accessible from Northwest Alexander Street, and would be immediately adjacent to the building. The limitations on parking near a property line is that, are only that it be, they be 5 feet offset from the property line, and there is adequate room to have a 9-foot wide parking space with a 5-foot setback within that, that area north of the, between the building and the property line. One of the comment letters noted that it's not likely that that space would be used given that it is in front of some view windows. Staff finds that speculation, and I don't believe that, that we can evaluate whether someone will use a facility that is provided for a specific purpose. So in staff's view, it does meet the requirements for parking. And of course, the impact of parking, if it is not adequately accommodated on the site, would primarily be that it would be on-street parking that would displace other potential demand for on-street parking. Finally, the development standards in Title 16 require design review for almost all development. There are very few exemptions, and this proposal has gone through the Ibis Landing National Historical Reserve design review process. It was reviewed by the Historic Preservation Commission, and they approved it with four conditions of approval. In staff's view, that would be the forum to evaluate whether the massing of the structure constituted a compatible fit with the neighborhood, with the immediate land use context, as well as with EB's reserve overall. This is not to say that the Planning Commission cannot also use massing as a criteria, provided that that the impacts, specific impacts to the community or to the immediate neighborhood can be identified in your findings, or that there is a determination can be made that it is not compatible, it's not consistent with the comprehensive plan as proposed in terms of building massing. Finally, the stormwater, all development, or most development is required to comply with, all development is required to comply with our stormwater regulations, which are in Chapter 1320 of the Municipal Code, as well as the 2012 Department of Ecology Stormwater Manual for Western Washington. And staff has worked with the applicant and believes that there is the perforated stub-out technique will meet the requirements of the stormwater manual and the code. The perforated stub-out is essentially an alternative to the more preferred solutions of or techniques of a rain garden or a dry well, both of which are intended to put as much water back into the ground as possible. In this case, there is such limited room on the site that these are not feasible, achieving the 10-foot setback of these facilities from a structure and a property line. So what remains for consistency with the stormwater water regulations is the perforated stub out, which is a tight line to a point near the property line where there is a vessel, like a vault, a small vault where a portion of the water can infiltrate, and the remainder will bubble out to the right of way, where it will be picked up in the roadside ditch and conveyed to a catch basin. Pardon me, at the northwest corner of the property. Staff has determined that this would meet all the requirements of our stormwater regulations. So in staff's view, it is the proposal is consistent with the intent of the zoning designation, as well as the specific development regulations applicable within that within the town commercial zone. The second finding that must be made is the proposed use at the proposed location will not be significantly detrimental to the public health, safety, and welfare, will not substantially harm or diminish the value of nearby property or improvements, and will not materially disturb the owners of nearby properties in the reasonable use of these properties. There's also provision that the town council may waive this finding where the use is considered to be a public necessity, which of course would not be applicable in this case. As discussed in the staff report, duplexes and single-family homes are very unusual land uses to be the subject of a conditional use permit, because the primary intent of a conditional use permit is to mitigate impacts for those uses which tend to have a broad range of potential, a spectrum of potential impacts or unidentifiable impacts at the time, or speaking generally about the use. A duplex or a single family home are typically considered to be to have understood impacts that will be generated, and such impacts are typically understood to be limited and less than most other urban land use forms. So it's not clear what the purpose of making a duplex or similarly a single family home a conditional use was when this was drafted about 20 years ago. So given that, staff chose to focus on those issues that had been raised by the commenters that seemed to be the important ones to the to at least the neighborhood. These included the building massing and the compatibility of building massing with the context, and then parking. Again, with regard to building massing, that is something that is typically addressed through design review and the body that is charged with advising staff, the Planning Commission, and the Town Council on design review declined to condition it to reduce the massing or to mitigate that aspect of the proposal in any way. There are several comprehensive plan policies that address this to some extent, and these are in attachment A to your staff report in the land use goals and policies. And these would include LU 1.1, which talks about supporting development that furthers the Coopville's historic small town character and discourage growth pressures that could adversely impact this character, and using height, setback, and other design controls to protect views and preserve quality and character of the town. The conditional use process does allow the town council to exceed the standards in the development code. And these would be standards that the design height setback and other design controls identified in the policy. In general, it is it's staff's assumption that for the most part, the design standards as adopted adequately implement the policy. So this is, if there is concern that the proposal will exceed the anticipated impacts from development within the town commercial zone, this would be that there is an opportunity to increase the setbacks or somehow modify the add conditions that will make the development regulations more restrictive than they currently read in the code. But again, as noted, there should be some, there should be findings that, that the massing is not merely, that the massing is somehow detrimental to public health, safety, and welfare, or actually harmful to other properties in the vicinity or the enjoyment of those properties. Staff did not, was not able to determine that there are impacts that warranted a reduction in, or an increase in the development regulations, in the strictness of the development regulations that would require a reduction in the mass of the building. Similarly with parking, it is an unusual situation, but staff was unable to find that there was harm caused by this somewhat less conventional approach to meeting the parking regulations. It is within the Planning Commission's purview to determine that the that to increase the requirements of the code. For instance, the reason that this parking arrangement works is that 1/4 of all required parking spaces can be compact. If it were not for the compact space, the use of the of parking in front of the garage would not work. Staff did not recommend such a change or such a condition because no harm could be found. With regard to the latest email on stormwater, again, the chapter or section 16, chapter 16.14 under conditional use permit regulations does allow for increasing the stormwater controls through the conditional use process. Staff is not aware that there are more stringent controls that could be applied that would effectively change the impact, the stormwater impact on other properties. In this case, because it does enter a catch basin on the or adjacent to the property, it is tight lined down the hill and out to the cove. And whether there's you know that results in some measurable harm to the cove, I couldn't tell you, but it would be that is that it does bypass all the downstream properties that way, and staff could not find any impacts to other properties that would result from the standard application of the stormwater regulations. So, in summary, staff felt that there could not determine any impacts that would require or would be would benefit from conditioning the project to increase the requirements already in the development code. Finally, the last required finding is that the proposal must be consistent, must be in harmony with the comprehensive plan. As we've talked about, the comprehensive plan talks about the town commercial zone as primarily intended for commercial development, and the implementation is not exactly consistent with that, but it is adopted implementation. It's not staff does not find it appropriate to determine that that the implementation is incorrect unless there is something particularly unusual about this application of the duplex land use that would not be assumed for duplexes anywhere else in the town. We've talked about the intent of the development regulations to control, to protect views and control, and to maintain the character of the town. That is something that you can consider in your deliberations. Staff was not able to find that that this was out of harmony with the comprehensive plan, despite being an unusually large building for the size of the lot. There was one, the one condition did, recommended by staff, did come from the, this finding of harmony with the comprehensive plan. This was from on page 11 of the staff report in attachment A. Policy HP 1.1 talks about direct safeguarding the heritage of the reserve as represented by those buildings, objects, sites, and structures which reflect the significant elements of the reserve's history. In this case, it is the application of the requirement to follow the inadvertent discovery protocols that are, it's a standard that is typically applied through the SEPA process, because that is, that has, the SEPA process requires analysis of potential impacts to cultural resources in addition to all the other dimensions of the environment. And this is really, it does not require a study. It is really a sort of a backstop. It is what to do if cultural resources are identified through excavation as the project is developed. So it is it's really just documenting best practices for protecting cultural resources in development. So that is the only recommended condition, and that would go with staff's recommendation to approve the proposal, with subject to only that condition. And that concludes staff's report.
Thank you, Owen. At this time, we will take questions or comments from the commissioners, if there are any. So kind of wave your hand. Commissioner
Ward. Well, I do have some, but I'm waiting.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. May I address my questions directly to Owen?
Yes.
Owen, just clarification, duplexes are permitted as a conditional, are expressly permitted as a conditional use in this particular zone, is that not correct?
That is correct.
And this application, as presented, would not require any variance. This is strictly a conditional use application. There are no variances that would be required here.
That's correct. Correct.
I guess the other question that comes up in light of the Exhibit 10 is, perhaps you can't answer, we'll have to ask the person who submitted this, but would the perforated stub out, do you think, meet the concerns of the downhill neighbor to the north as far as runoff affecting that particular property?
That's my assumption, and I did respond in a response email to her, because I had some concerns that I wanted her to understand. First of all, that her let her know that her comments would be incorporated into the project record, but also sort of provide some limits to the potential relief. Now, in staff's view, and I discussed this with the town engineer, in staff's view, it's likely that any existing impacts from the property are from interflow. That is stormwater that has been absorbed into the ground. The geology of the Coopville, the majority of the Coopville area, is a small amount of easily recharging topsoil, and a very, very significant layer of glacial till that forms a barrier past which water can no longer, cannot absorb. So it goes through the ground, hits this till layer, and goes downhill through the ground, and that's interflow. My assumption is that with the concurrence of the town engineer, that with more impervious surface on this site, it will actually decrease the amount of recharge into the ground, and therefore potential interflow that may be coming out of the ground farther down the hill at her property. It will not increase overland discharge or overland flows, because anything that is all impervious surfaces will be collected and conveyed essentially, well, to the swale, and from the swale along the western site boundary to a catch basin, and then past the property. So I think it seems reasonable that development of the site will actually relieve rather than exacerbate the current situation. It's not clear how water would get from this site to that, to her property, unless it was somehow bypassing the catch basin, which is within that, the swale along the property line.
Do I have any other questions? Thank you.
Commissioner Ricardo?
No, not at this time.
Commissioner Julie?
Yeah, I do not.
I do have several that are kind of interrelated. I understand the parking solution. One would typically think that if it's a duplex, each unit would get two spaces rather than one unit having three and the other one one. And maybe it's out of our area of even to be asking the question that it would affect the renters rather than the solution itself. But anyway, do you see what I'm asking?
I do. There are perhaps several ways of, or a couple considerations for this, and I think there is certainly validity to that. There is one garage door rather than two, and so that will be controlled by one party unless there's common control of the garage, and therefore the assumption would be that one of the parties, one of the units, would get the area inside the garage and the other would get an area outside. I think one way of looking at this is the house is, this was originally proposed as a large single-family home with an accessory dwelling unit that would be separately, that would be rented by the owners of the home, or rented out by the owners of the home. The accessory dwelling unit, or I'm sorry, the secondary duplex unit, rather, is only 600 square feet. So,
In the current plan.
Oh, correct.
Okay.
Correct. That is, it is accessible. It's on the lower floor. It's accessible from a door that faces Northwest Alexander Street. So they're not two equal units. There is a very large unit and there is a very small unit.
I misread that. I thought they were two equal units.
No, it is, and I believe the intent was for a shorter term rental, so it would not be ongoing use of it, but since that is not allowed in the code, that may actually be in practice until the code is revised. That may be what actually occurs. So it is possible that you could have someone renting that unit who would have two cars, and that would require that either one of the cars be parked in front. And I don't recall whether I put this in the staff report, but there's some similarity to even a single family home where you have a garage and two parking spaces in front of it and four cars. So what we enforce is compliance with the provision of a minimum number of parking spaces.
Not whether it's inconvenient.
Not whether it's inconvenient or how it's used or in this case, it's a little different because it is two separate living units that would be sharing a common driveway, and I do grant you that is unusual. I'm not sure what the resolution would be outside of what is currently proposed without revision to require that that there be something other than tandem parking.
And I'm not suggesting that that we should act in that capacity. I just was clarifying whether or not the code actually said that each unit should have an equal number of parking.
It says each duplex unit will have two parking spaces. So,
oh, okay, but it doesn't say, yes, got it.
It's still one site for all intents and purposes.
Okay.
They could be all three or all four placed together on the exterior of the building.
Sure.
In a shared situation elsewhere.
Okay. Well, and then continuing along with the parking, I don't know why I landed on this one. I see where that fourth parking spot will be that you access off of Alexander, but it also looks like it's on the infiltration trench. Is that going to cause any problems with? No,
because the this site plan shows a preliminary proposal for stormwater management on the site. As it turns out, the infiltration trench needs to be 10 feet from a property line and 10 feet from a structure, and there's just no way of accommodating that, and that's where the perforated stub out came
from. Oh, so this, that won't even exist then?
Correct.
Okay.
There is an easement from the property to the east that crosses this property, and this would be parking on that, but a parking on a utility easement is not... In staff's view, an adverse use of it of an easement, underground easement.
And that will, and the neighbor then to the east, do they have input on that parking?
They would
location?
Have. They would have. The easement is granted to the neighbor, and therefore the neighbor has the right to defend has the ability to defend their rights under that easement.
But they haven't expressed it.
They haven't, and nothing has been expressed.
Okay. And then one final question. I promise this is the final one. Do you have any idea how much setback, or maybe let me put it this way, the house to the east, would you say that the setbacks are 10 feet on the sides, or no, on the front? Do they meet the same criteria? I'm trying to get an idea of the mass of the structure, and the house next door looks fairly large.
It's actually, the house next door is about 4,100 square feet. It's several hundred square feet of footprint less, or let's see if I get this right. It is, it's within several hundred feet, square feet of the footprint of the current house, or of the proposed duplex. So it is very comparable. I believe the single family home next door does have similar setbacks. It may not be quite as close to the property line, but I couldn't give you specifics on that. I know because it's the same size, 6,000 square foot lot. The lot is identical, and it's a very similarly sized structure.
Are there any other questions from the commissioners?
No, not at the time.
Okay.
My questions were concerning the same thing you brought up, Carol, about the parking location and what Michael brought up about the drainage. So I'm waiting to hear from the applicant about.
And that leads right into, this is the time when the applicant, you can make any comments that you would like and address any of the comments that we have made with more information if you prefer.
My name is Dan Miranda, I live in Coopville, 603 Northeast Lindsay. I'm going to be the builder of this house. I also built the house up above it so I can answer a lot of the questions that you asked.
Okay.
First off, the setback that you were just talking about on the existing house is right on that 10 foot in the furthest part that sticks out on the sides and on the front. The furthest setback is on the north side of the house, which also has an easement that goes down through in between the Holbrook home, old barn and that, and there's, they have a driveway that goes down there. So that's, I think that's 12 feet on that side, it might be 15. And if you'll notice on the site plan, you'll see on this one that really there's only a few places that actually are right to the setback line, and it jogs, so like as you're coming down to the stop sign, you'll notice that it jigs and jogs, and so is actually further away than the 10 foot or 6 foot or whatever the setback is on accordingly on each side. As far as the land mat or the massing of the building, I'd like to address is it's actually lower average height than what is allowed in town. So if the average height is 23 feet, I mean, it could be 5 feet higher, really. So the pitch of the roof was actually, I mean, we talked about height, and if it was a 7-12 pitch or a 9-12 pitch, it would have this big giant roof and block out the neighbors up above, which Kelly actually agreed to lower it down to more of a traditional pitch that will allow the view over the top. And so I personally think it looks better than that, and you're not looking at a big piece of roof anyway. So it's very similar roof pitch to the one that's right next door. And the garages are kind of mirrored opposite, as if you look at the design on each of them, you'll notice that that's kind of how it was designed originally. Back when that house was built, the existing house, in the design review process, that's how they suggested to build that front as well on the new house, which is proposed originally back 6 years ago or whenever that house was built. So that's why it's kind of designed that way. As far as your concerns on the drainage, yes, Owen is correct that, in my opinion also, is that when the house gets dug down into that impervious layer, you're going to have drainage around the whole house. It's going to catch any water that comes down to it, go down into the drain, into the footings. It's going to work its way around and actually have less water that goes in the ground heading that way towards your house. And I don't know that that particular lot would even get water, because the hill kind of comes sideways towards Alexander. So, I mean, it kind of goes towards Coveland, I guess, a little bit, but I think water would have a hard time if you held a hose or a fire hydrant on that lot and opened it up, that it would even go that way at all. But that's just my opinion. But once it gets all enclosed in gravel and contained and then put into the culvert, it will follow its way out to the cove, as Owen said, and it will be less water that goes down that way. I think her concern was probably coming down the road, and there is a catch basin there that will take it all after it goes through the little whatever the town engineer suggested we put in for the code for the state requirements. You had a couple other questions about a few things. I forget when the height, all the setbacks, the drainage. Anything else that I can?
Well, I was going to, one question about the concern about the parking.
Oh, that was it. Go ahead.
Looking at Exhibit 2, the proposed house, the staircase that's, that shows us from upstairs going down, is that going into the garage or is it?
No,
it's not.
It's inside the house.
It is inside the house.
Yeah.
Right. So the proposed second duplex have no access to the garage whatsoever, or no access.
Correct.
Unless going to the wrong building to get to that.
Correct.
Okay.
We were discussing parking in the back, and if there's a possible way to get two spaces down here with the space, I mean, we, you know, try to do that as well. Owen, is the small car allowance, do you know the depth on that? I mean, it's 9 feet wide, but is it 16 feet or?
Yeah, it's set in here. I thought it said 14.
8.5 by 14.5.
Okay, and the regular one, so we'd need 14.5 feet deep plus how much more? if we did two on the lower section, if they were behind each other.
19.
19 total? Or?
No, 19.
19 plus 14 and a half. That'd be 23. So it looks like we only have, there's 12, and we got to be 5 feet off the property line. So we got five, yeah, it'd be pretty tight. Now if we could do two short ones, that'd be good. Yeah, we're trying, I mean, it'd be great if we could do it down there. And the funny thing that's, as you look at this site plan, the corners are actually quite a ways in if you look at the property. When you, if we have a picture looking down, which I think you do on one of these pages, the property corners are actually in quite a ways. On a Google Earth shot or something, is there one of those here? No, I know we're not supposed to park. She's supposed to provide it on her own property, but as far as massing and as far as parking goes, it's not as tight as it looks on this picture as far as setbacks goes. As you look at the house to the east, it has a lot of area in front of it in the town. Yeah. Access area. But unless you have any other questions, I'm more than happy to answer her.
I did have one question, I'm sure.
Okay, I'm just going to clarify. Normally we would take public comment and applicant response to the public comment, and I'm assuming that the two of you probably already talked and don't need to question each other here. Okay. So yes, we can go to the commissioners questioning the applicant.
Okay.
Which is Daniel.
Okay.
Thanks. Go ahead.
I just have one question, Mr. Miranda. Did I understand you to say that you, as part of this development, you're going to put in an additional catch basin in the public street?
There is currently one down there. There is actually a catch basin that has a metal grade on the top of it, and it's right off the corner of the property. And in fact, the overflow from the lot to the east actually goes into it currently. So we'll just tie into that drain with the overflow from the engineer's recommendation on catching in a smaller, for lack of better words, dry well.
So is this a matter of tying into to an existing?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
No other questions.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to make one comment. I did not drive by the site to evaluate it according to this proposal, but it has been my impression in the past in looking at the house that is directly to the east, how nicely it sits on that piece of property. And you're totally correct. If the reason it looks so nice is because it doesn't have the great big roof line, that certainly goes a long ways to make me feel like this one on the corner is going to have the identical result.
Yes, I think so too. I think it'll look really good together with
good.
That one. Yeah.
I have a question for Owens. Can I add that?
Well, let's first, any more questions for the contractor?
Great, thank you.
And the applicant. Thank you. Go ahead.
My question was the property to the north of the site that's proposed, is there historical buildings there? I think it just occurred to me.
There are actually a number of historic buildings in the vicinity. Immediately to the north is the Horace Holbrook House. And there's currently some work on a historic garage at the west end of the property. But there are three historic buildings on that site. Additionally, if you are looking at the at Exhibit 7, on the east side of Northwest Grace Street. There is a, unfortunately I can't remember the name of it, but there is a, at the northeast corner of Grace and Northwest Grace and Northwest A Street is one of our, another of our designated historic resources. And then I'm sorry.
What's the name of the house? Are you talking about the one right next to the Masonic Lodge?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, correct. Yeah, just west of the...
That's a historic structure?
It is. Okay. And then the Lovejoy Inn at 5 Northwest Front, or Northwest 8th Street is also a designated resource.
The reason I ask is, do you know if there's any ordinance that restricts any development next of budding historical property?
No. So the effect is, if any proposed development, proposed building within 100 feet of a historic, of a designated historic building requires a review by the full Historic Preservation Commission, and they did review this, but that's the only code limitation. And then with that, there are some design guidelines that talk about not impacting views of from public ways, views of historic buildings, but nothing else, no prohibitions.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions or comments? Okay. From either of you, okay. So this closes the public comment portion of the hearing, and there won't be anything that can now be added to the public record as this goes on to the town council. So at this point, do I have a motion on this proposal? Who's going to speak first?
Well, again, on the floor, I would move, Madam Chair, the commission adopt as findings of fact the proposed findings that are set forth under paragraph H on page 9 of the staff report. As findings of fact, and that the commission also make as conclusions of law any proposed conclusions that are set forth at pages 9 to 10. That's one motion for findings of fact and conclusions of law.
Okay. Is there a second to that motion?
I second that.
Thank you. All those in, is there any more comments? Okay. In favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Hearing none. We'll move on to the second portion.
Okay. Follow-up motion would be to approve the proposed, approve the application for the conditional use permit that we have before us, number 084-17, with the condition of approval recommended by the staff at page 10 of the staff report, based on the findings and conclusions already made. I would move that the application be granted, or the direction, I need to back up here, but we recommend that the application be granted subject to the condition of approval set forth at page 10. Sorry, Carol, did I?
She'll make you sound really good.
Okay.
Okay, is there a second to the final wording that was proposed? Thank you. Any other comments? Okay, hearing none, all of those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Opposed.
Okay, that should be recorded as 3 ayes and 1 opposed. Thank you. This concludes our hearing, and we Moving on in the agenda, is there any new business that needs to come before the commissioners at this time?
None from staff.
Pardon?
None from staff.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, if there's no new business, this takes us to the portion of our meeting that is always allotted for input from the audience, if there were one. So I think we can safely bypass that part. I would entertain a motion for adjournment.
I would move to adjourn.
And a second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
That passed. Okay, thank you all. Well, I don't either, but it's not within our...